Okay, we're about to start momentarily. Again, we'll do a audio check. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everybody, wherever you're logging in from. We'll start the class today. It'll be a 30-minute class, question and answer discussion, following up some ideas we've been writing about regarding God's unity, God being one, and also in terms of whether there should be different ideas of God for different religions. So we'll start the class just momentarily in a few minutes. And we'll be doing an audio check. So once you hear the audio feed started, just type audio okay at the bottom of your screen. That'll give us confirmation that you're picking up the audio fine. Okay, it's good to see everybody. Gene, good to see you. Hector, thanks a lot. And the class is scheduled for 1:30 today. That's just in a few minutes. And at a certain point during the class, we'll ask for your comments. Or if there are any questions posed at that point, you could use a text window to type in your comments. Avix in Netherlands, good to see you. And if any of the class is missed, you can always hear the full class. We post it usually within a half an hour after the class has completed. It's posted underneath the audio files link. That's the seventh link down on the left-hand side of the Masara website. Okay, Debbie, good to see you. And again, once again to everybody else, once you hear the audio feed, just type in audio okay at the bottom of your screen. That will confirm that the audio is going fine for everybody. And we put some directions on screen in case you have any problem with the audio. Okay, Gene, good to see you again. Michael Dakar. Tammy in Israel, thank you. Now we just wait a few more moments to make sure everybody else is logged on and audio is going fine. And again, today we'll discuss the ongoing issue regarding, there were 2 points. One is regarding what happens to be commonly heard in many schools, and it doesn't seem to be addressed or updated in many adults. Retain the belief, the concept of there being a piece of God in everybody. It's a very pleasant sounding idea. The question is whether it's true, whether it's actually an idea based in Judaism or not. And if not, what are the sources? And reasoning wise, we have to use our reason above all else, because many times people will quote sources, and as a rabbi once said, if we know something to be true based on reason, we don't start running to sources that seem, on the surface, or even literally, conflict with what's true. Once we know something is true, that's how we live our lives. That's what we based our convictions on. And we don't look at what the majority of other people might believe or feel or what other religions say. Okay, good to see you, Nissim. And Solaria, and Mark in Israel. Good to see you all. And again, once you hear the audio feed, just type audio okay at the bottom of the screen. Confirm for us here that you're picking up the audio fine. Okay, so it looks like the audio is okay. Okay, so let's start. The first idea to discuss would be, we're having an ongoing discussion. There's been one person who's been in contact with a lot of other Jews and Jewish teachers and Gentiles in different online message boards, and the topic of whether or not a Gentile does not have to have the same view of God as a Jew. So the first thing we should really note is something that we read in last week's Parsha, where God said to Abraham, that he was not going to keep hidden his justice for Sodom, when he destroyed Sodom, because of the reasoning that Abram is going to be recognized by all the other nations, and all the other nations would bless Abram, meaning they would recognize Abram as being a leader. And also Abraham was going to he was going to teach his children and his household after him in the ways of Hashem to do tzedakah u'mishpat, to do righteousness and charity. So based on this concern, this desire that God wanted Avram to have the right ideas to teach over, so we see that he endorsed Avram, and Avram's whole life was spent approaching other people, and there were no such thing as Jews and Gentiles in Avram's time. Now, if God sanctioned Abraham's acts of going out to the other people and showing them the false notions that they had in terms of idolatry and polytheism, that means that this is God's will, that all people should have the correct idea. And Abraham, of course, we know is a monotheist. That's why he's referred to in the Torah as Abraham HaIvri. Ivri can mean he's from the Eber Hanah, the other side of the river, meaning all the people were of one philosophy, but Abraham was on the other side of the river, meaning he was of a different philosophy, meaning he was a monotheist where everybody else was idolatrous. Another explanation for the word Ivri is that he came from or was trained by Aver. Aver and Ivri is the same word. Shem v'Aver, those were the two individuals that were known for their correct ideas as well. Shem was the son of Noah. A third explanation as to why he's called Ivri, because the word Ivri has the root word Aver, which also means a limb. And the rabbis say that he was of a different limb, meaning he was of a different type of personality. But all the ideas are basically outlining a certain philosophy that Avram had, where he was not a conformist, and he was also monotheistic, and he was not led astray by masses, which unfortunately many Jews today are. Many Jews feel that there are so many more Christians or Muslims, therefore there must be something true about their religion if there are so many of them. Well, that's not an argument, because the simple proof, the simple refutation against that would be if the whole world started to accept that 2 plus 2 equals 5, that in no way has any bearing on the truth. An idea has to be accepted based on the idea itself. Now, based on the fact that Abraham was made into a nation by God, that he should lead the rest of the world, and eventually, given his descendants were given the Torah, and that we should be a light unto the other nations, as the Haftorah of Bereshis says, we just read 4 weeks ago. So that means that the ideas that we have are to be taught over. These are the right ideas, and the others are incorrect. So to say that we have to have the correct idea about God, that he is one, and that the other nations do not have to have that idea, is against the philosophy of the Torah, it's against the words of the Torah. Even though it's popular, we have to understand, well, what is the truth? Because there are many views and there's many religions. So just like there's many religions and all the religions argue on each other, therefore the religions themselves attest to their own opinions that not every religion is correct. Christians follow Christianity, saying that, in other words, this is the one religion that we feel is correct and the all others are not. Jews follow Judaism, which again is saying the same idea, and the same thing for Islam and Buddhism and so on. So therefore, we see that all religions are not the correct religion for man, and we have to come to some method of arriving at which religion is correct. And we've gone over this many times in our classes here, and we had said that the proof that we have of Judaism is based on historical evidence, and also that the reasons themselves, the ideas of Judaism, do not conflict with anything. In contrast, the other religions are based on blind faith because there is no reason to support their claims. So it's important, number one, that we keep in the foreground of our minds the proof of Sinai, the historical event which even the other religions accept and cannibalized in order to gain some credence for their religions. Okay. And of course, the ideas themselves have to be based in what is pleasing to our minds, what makes sense. And we do not see that in other religions. As a matter of fact, there are arguments of the other religionists that I've heard where after a while, they've realized that, maybe many times they hear it coming out of Christianity, that the Christians say, you know, we just realized after many years that this does not make sense, and which is a correct statement. But this is the reason why Christianity has, as its core, the concept of blind faith. Now, it's an interesting thing that many Christians will be very rational in every other area of their life. When it comes to picking a school for the child or selecting a profession for themselves, they'll be very careful and very analytical in terms of coming up with a good approach, a sensible approach to this area. And certainly when they take positions at work, they'll want to have contracts. They want to have proof that they're getting paid X amount of dollars. So that shows you the person has the capacity to function with his reason. Well, this reason should be applied to the most important area of life, which is one's philosophy, one's religion. And we have one chance here at life. We should not waste it by just throwing up our hands and saying, well, you know, I'm just going to follow what everybody else says. The rabbis condemn that type of an approach to life. God gave each of us an intellect for the reason that God wants each of us to use the intellect, not just follow even the rabbis blindly, but to hear what they say first, and then use our minds to arrive at the truth. And that, Rabbi Bachya, who wrote Duties of the Heart, stated, V'yadat hayom v'hashevosa alavecha, which is what we recite in Aleinu every day, which translated means you should know it today, and then you should place it in your heart. So he says you should know it today based on the tradition of the rabbis, what we receive from them, but then you should place it in your heart. What does that mean? It means that you should use your own reason to see truthfully that the ideas make sense to your mind. Okay. Okay, before we go further, usually a little bit into the class, we just do one more audio confirmation. If everybody who's tuning in now can just type audio okay at the bottom of the screen, that'll just do one final confirmation that the audio feed is going well. And we'll move on with the class. And again, if there's any comments at this point, you can also feel free to type them in at this point. I'll pause. And Tammy in Israel is writing, but it is written, Naaseh v'nishma, first do and then think. That's a different idea, Tammy. That does not mean that you should ultimately not think. Of course, the Jews at Sinai saw the undeniable event. So Naaseh v'nishma is appropriate. Okay, so if there's any comments up to this point, feel free to type them in right now. I'll pause so I could see your comments and respond to them. Okay, audio looks like it's going good. Thanks, Avix, Hector, Nissim, Jean. Okay, Hector, you're writing something there. Whichever word was censored, just put dashes between what that word was. There's a basic censor file that may be containing keywords that may be similar to other words. Shitif, okay. Okay, good. Hector, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, the concept of shitif. Shitif means, very simply, the word partnership. I can have a shitif with another person. I can have a partnership with another person. Now, the word is also used in connection with God, the concept of whether or not God is the sole exclusive cause of the universe. Now, one idea which you should know is that if we say that God could not make the universe unless it was with the existence of something else, that now removes God from being the sole cause. He is no longer the exclusive cause for the universe. And now, if that was true, you should listen carefully to this refutation. If it is true that God could not create the universe himself, but there was another partner in it, like the Christian Trinity, that they say there's a certain role that other deities play along with God, what that means to say is that there is something delegating a limited scope of function, meaning to say God could only do X amount by himself, but needed this other thing. Now, keep in mind, need is not to be applied to God. Need is something which is an attribute of something which is created. Things have needs. Animals need food. People need food. People need shelter, clothing. So need is something which is not solely independent. And that only applies to things which are created. At the core of needs is a thing's existence, meaning nothing exists by itself except for God. And how that is, we do not know. Like God said to Moses, you will not know, man cannot know me while you're alive. So that's an impossibility. And again, keep in mind, we always have to go back to what we know the real sources are in terms of Judaism and philosophy. It's not what people do, it's not what people say. It's what we have in the Torah based on Moses' words, what God endorsed, and the five books of Moses, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, as well as all the words of the prophets. That is what we base our ideas, our philosophy on. And we cannot veer from that. And if we are honest and truthful to those words, and we use our intelligence in understanding them and not distorting those words, we will then be assured that we will be carrying the right ideas throughout our life. It's the people that are not learning or ignorant or have emotional distortions that take what the Torah says and make it into something which is a destruction of Torah and his false ideas. So if God says to Moshe, you cannot know me while you're alive, and Moshe and Moses was the highest level intelligence, the highest level of intellect that any human being could have, so certainly anybody else cannot know what God is, which basically teaches you that all those people giving classes and starting to talk about that God has these emanations and God does this and God does that, if it's not a pasuk, if it's not a verse in the Torah, if it's not something that the prophets stated, so then it's not something a person should be able to talk about. This is something which ruins Torah, because people walk away from these Kabbalah classes going, ooh, and ah, you know, they, as if they found that some great, deep, mystical secret, when in fact, they don't know what the teacher said, and the teacher doesn't know what he said. But since it's such an attraction today to have these Kabbalah classes and to talk about areas of what they call mysticism, so what is happening is that Judaism is now being corrupted. The truth is, there's a whole debate whether the Kabbalah that we have is even authentic. I know a story where a rabbi went to the Vatican and saw certain sections of it. And when he left, he was doubtful whether this was really authentic or not. The bottom line is, an idea has to make sense. I don't care what the source is. If it doesn't make sense, so then the person is wasting their time saying what they're saying. So again, it's important, it's essential, it's crucial that if you want to have the correct ideas of what Judaism is, you know the sources, you look at the sources, you see what the rabbis stated. You go through the Talmud. It's not an easy thing. You don't get it overnight. But if you want the truth, there has to be toil. Amelim b'Torah. Okay. Okay. And we're looking at, it looks like Tammy, right now you're not getting audio. if there is audio for anybody else, let's just make sure that there's no break in the audio. If you can just type audio, okay. Let's just do one more confirmation that the audio is going through all right, and that it's not just locally for where Tammy is, because Tammy is in Israel. So if those of you that are picking up the audio now can just type audio, okay. And we'll continue. Okay, it looks like it's an issue where Tammy is. All right, sometimes that's going to happen, unfortunately. Okay, let me just check a couple of other areas. Richard 1, why don't you tell me how the audio is there? Nissim, how is the audio? Alex in Mexico, good to see you. Okay, looks like the audio is all right. All right, let's stop for a minute and see if there's any comments. If you have any comments or questions, I'll pause at this point so I can respond to some of your remarks. Now, just to answer the initial question, shituf means the concept where people today will say that God is not one, there's something else joined with God. That is something which is prohibited for Jew and Gentile alike, because the Gentile has to, one of the seven Noahides is not to have idolatry, not to commit idolatry. Okay. So it's important that we see that there is no second concept of God that somebody else has. And keep in mind, other people, and you may call other people of another religion, but they are not another type of human being. Since we all have the same capacity for understanding, so we can all arrive at the same concept of God. There is only one God. There is only one cause. And again, what I was trying to get at before is that the concept, the notion, I should say, because it's not even a true concept, the notion that God created the world, but there is something else. There are other deities. What that means to say is that each deity alone could not be responsible for creating the world by himself. Therefore, there had to be another one. But think about this. What would limit God and this other deity? Then, if you're saying that there's more than one God, that means to say that inherently each God is limited in his scope of operation. But limited means that something else is now imposing that limitation. So even if you say the concept that there's more than one God, you now have to, by definition, say that something is imposing this limitation. And that would be even more supreme than God and something else. Okay, is that idea clear to everybody? Okay, Tammy and Israel are saying that God could have created the deities as assistants. Well, that would imply a need, Tammy. All right, this is to Tammy and Israel. To say that God created other deities as assistants implies that God is not omnipotent. He's not exclusively powerful by himself. If he's not all-powerful, then he has to create other deities. That also shows a limitation on God. Okay, Hector, thanks for that. I hope that it's clear to everybody else. And we also went through this many times in the past. We went through this very many times. And those classes are online. Those are under, if you go to the audio files, you can do this after the class. You'll see that there's a whole series of fundamentals. Today's class is Fundamentals 12 in this series. And the initial ones are very important. I urge you all to listen to the first few at least, because that's where we went through Maimonides' words on the fact that God is one and why is that so crucial to our thought. Okay, and welcome to Pesach and to Jardina in CZ. I'm not sure what CZ is unless it's Czech and Carrie in Finland and Miriam. Okay, welcome to all of you who just joined on. Okay, any questions at this point? Let me just pause and see if there's any questions. Mark in Boston is asking, the fact that God created the world, isn't that a need? Well, I don't understand why we have to say that as a need, Mark. You're suggesting that God created the world out of a need. That's basically a projection of how human beings work. When we do something, there's a need, we have a motive, and that's generated by some need. But that's only because we are designed with a need. You can't say that God functions the same way as those things he created. It's true that human beings and animals, they function based on need. But that's part of the created world. God doesn't have need. And we quoted also in the past where it says in Isaiah, God says, "L'mi adama v'ani asher? To who will you equate me that I should be similar?" Right? Actually, it means, to what will you equate me? God is basically stating that there is nothing in this world that you could consider to be similar to God in any way. So we have to be very careful about that. Again, those that the rule is, go back to what God said himself. Debbie is writing, aren't the angels basically assistants? Not in the sense that God has any need, Debbie. Tammy in Israel. Echad and Yochid. I can't really comment on that now, Tammy. Avix in Netherlands is writing, why is using delegates or assistants a need? Exactly, I agree with you, Avix. Tammy in Israel is writing, I think that creating assistants might reflect a choice by God and not a need. That would be a good way to put it, Tammy. Pesach is writing, God created all consciousness, whatever and all is living and real. Yes, of course, Pesach. Anything that exists, God created. Anything that we see is a creation of God. Whether it's a behavior, whether it's a physical object, whether it's the universe, animals, laws, anything that we witness is a creation of God. All right, Pesach, I'm not sure if you were asking a question or if you had a follow-up on that. Okay. All right. Okay, and Tammy, you wrote that you disagree. You didn't qualify what you disagree, but later on you wrote that creating assistance might reflect a choice. So if that's your position, of course, that makes full sense. Okay. Now let's talk about another idea. Another point that came up was this concept of a piece of God being in all of us. I was talking to a girl who's in elementary school. I think she's about 8 years old. And she was reciting to me what her teacher told her. Unfortunately, teachers are still holding on to this idea. But once we say that God is one, that means there's no such division. There's no such concept of division that can be applicable to God, because division is also part of the created world. And that is something which God said, to what can you equate me to that I should be similar? So that doesn't apply only to objects and beings. It also applies to any attribute. So the concept, the attribute of division, that physical things can be divided, cannot be applied to God. Therefore, you cannot say that there is a piece of God in man. God created our soul. He didn't take a piece of himself and put it in us. Our Siddur actually says that. Elokai Neshama. Atobarasa. You created the soul. It means to say that the soul was created from nothing, just like the universe was created from nothing. However, you have to understand the motive in people. And when you understand motives, then you could appreciate why people do make the error. It gives a person a feeling that there's something holy in himself. There's a certain limit to how far he can corrupt himself. But that's not true, because you see that God killed people in the past, the generation of Noah and the whole city of Sodom. Those five cities, God destroyed them because people did deviate to such a low level that their existence was no more justified and had to be destroyed. Now, what are you going to tell me? That God put a piece of himself in these people and then God killed a piece of himself? So then people will say, no, well, God took the piece of himself out of these people before he killed them. But the whole idea is all convoluted. It's starting off on a heretic premise. And I say heretic because it is heresy to say that God is similar to anything in the physical world. God cannot be divided. God does not put a piece of himself in man. These go back to the basic fundamentals of Judaism. And since these fundamentals are not taught, this is why not only is this student, and I hope that I corrected her, but her teacher is retaining this very, very tragic and fatal error. Okay. So it's important that we when we hear things, we don't just, and it doesn't matter if we hear them from a person called Rabbi. Nobody named Rabbi has a monopoly on truth. Every person makes a mistake. Ki ein adam tzaddik ba'aretz yaaseh tov lo yechtah. King Solomon said, for there is no man who is righteous in the land who does good and never sins. Never sins means that it's impossible that man never sins or never makes an error, because all sin comes from an error, an intellectual or emotional error. Even Moses made mistakes. And the Gemara does cite only four people who didn't sin. That does not mean they didn't make an intellectual error. It just means they didn't sin. But again, there were only those four. But Moses himself made mistakes. So you have to be clear and listen to the idea based on its truth. And if somebody tells you there's a piece of God in other people, in people in general, or if they think that idea is completely against what God says. Okay, let's look on screen and see if there's any comments on this. If you have any comments on that point, feel free to type them in. Okay, Pesach is writing that God created Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, all physical reality, and all spiritual reality. No, that is not true, Pesach. Because false ideas are man-made. He may have made the physical person, Muhammad, Jesus, but he did not create their false ideas. Okay, and welcome to Doc IZ and Nachum, who just logged on. Pesach is writing, the whole world is full of his glory. True, everything we see in the world attests God's his omnipotence and his omniscience. He is in all of us everywhere at once. That again, the Pesach, that idea is a flawed idea. If you want to offer your reasoning, that you can do, but just to say the statement that he is in all of us everywhere at once is nonsensical. Okay, Nissim in New York is writing. A popular heresy, does this teacher, as many others hold, that only Jews have a piece of Hashem? Good point, Nissim, yes. That is a popular view, that Jews have a better soul than Gentiles. When the proof against that is that Abraham, who was not a Jew, had one of the most perfected souls. But not that he was given a different soul than anybody else. He worked on himself, and as he gained in his knowledge and extricated himself from idolatry, he perfected his mind, his soul, his thinking, and he perfected his own perfection. So the idea that a Gentile has a lesser soul than a Jew is complete bigotry. Mark in Boston, are you saying that God is separate from the created world? That means that there is reality outside of Hashem. I don't know what you mean outside of Hashem, because the concept of outside doesn't apply to God, Mark. Again, you can't talk about God in the same way as you talk about two objects that are geographically juxtaposed to each other. Yes, two different physical objects, one is outside the other object. But you can't use the term outside in connection with God. So the statement can't, we really can't talk about that concept. We don't know what God is. But we know that the physical world is a creation. God made it, and it did not always exist. Those are God's words, Mark, all right? Veracious, bara Elokim, es ha-shamayim v'es-ha-aretz. In the beginning, God created the heavens and earth from nothing. Creation means something from nothing. Michael and Dakar, a side point, but it's quick, I'll answer it. Nefesh, it means a power of life. That's why an animal could have a nefesh, but it doesn't have a neshama. An animal can have a nefesh because he has the ability, he has life. There is a certain life force. Hector in, I guess that's Arizona, or is it Arkansas? I'm not sure. When it says that God breathed into Adam's nostrils, okay, is that to be understood figuratively as he created Adam's soul? Yes. Yes, Hector. Doesn't mean that God breathes. God does not have anything physical, so he can't breathe. Okay. Shira is writing soul or breath. Okay, I guess you're just commenting on that. Pesach is writing, if God is infinite and eternal, then how can he be absent anywhere at any time? We don't say God is absent. But again, you cannot try to fit God into the physical world. See, that's another problem. I'm sure many of you have heard of the term tzimtzum. Tzimtzum means contraction. Let me just read the Nissim, what he just wrote, and then we'll go into tzimtzum in 1 second. Here is the refutation, Nissim writes, we accept converts as equals, so according to the fallacy, converts would be of lesser worth. So the matrilineal background of David Solomon is deficient. Okay, good point, Nissim. Nissim is writing that if it was true that a Gentile would be any lesser than a Jew, how could it be that King David and King Solomon, who came from a Gentile, would be kings? And I'll add to your point, Nissim, that our Jewish Messiah, the Mashiach, is a descendant of a Gentile, right? Ruth is the great, great matriarch of Mashiach. Okay, so that shows you that God does not choose between a Jew or Gentile. Again, God did not create Jew and Gentile. God created man and woman. Right? He created human beings. Because of human deviation and idolatry that cropped up afterwards, therefore, God gave a system to one nation that was following monotheism in order that we should teach everybody else, but we all have the same exact design. A Jew has no greater soul than a Gentile because we're all human. If a Gentile converts, he is now equal to the Jew. Okay, Avix in Netherlands is writing a disagreement to Nissen. He says, I disagree. A convert gets a new soul. Avix, that's not based on any truth. That might be your belief, but it is not based on any truth. Now, let me just go to Tzimtzum. I want to comment on this because this is another false idea, which is dealing with the same topic. Since I've noticed a number of you are trying to view God in a geographical sense, meaning God is outside the world or the world is outside of God, this is where the problem of contraction comes in. There is a theory that people say, and they say that when God created the world, since God filled up the entire universe, in order to make room for the world, the earth, the sun, the planets, he had to contract himself to make space for the world. Now, I want to stop here 1 second and ask you how you can refute this idea. Again, what I'm asking everybody today is to think. All right? Think about this idea, if this makes any sense to you. That when God created the universe, since God is everywhere, therefore he had to contract himself in order to make space for the universe. Do you agree with this or not? This is the principle of Tzimtzum, contraction. Many people hold on to this. The question is, do you believe? If so, explain your view. If you do not agree with Tzimtzum, with the fact that God had to contract himself, please write down on screen what your refutation is. I'd like you all to think about this, take a moment, and tell me agree or disagree and qualify it. All right, so I'm going to pause at this point because I'd like you all to think about this concept. Tzimtzum, that God had to contract himself. Okay, so I'm going to pause one moment. And also, while you're writing, don't look at the entries of other people who are in the class today. Think about it yourself and give an argument. If you don't have an answer either way, then don't write anything. But don't look at the screen because I don't want you to cheat out yourself from thinking about the problem. Okay, I'm going to just wait one more moment. I see a couple of you already jotted down your thoughts. Okay. Okay, so let me go on screen and see what your ideas are on here. Okay, Hector is writing, I disagree. That would mean that he has a physical limit. Okay. That means to say that there's, I guess, a certain size, and therefore it's occupying space. Okay, good. Mark in Boston is writing, Hashem has no size, so it could not contract out of the space that was created by Hashem in the first place. Okay, same idea. Good. Tammy in Israel writes, no, it sounds primitive, that God had to contract himself. Jordana is writing, Hashem need not to contract out. All right. Debbie is writing, the premise of Tzimtzum theory is false. Filling up a universe, quote unquote, means that God is physical, which is not true. Okay, very good. Nissim in New York is writing, the universe is still expanding. My understanding of Tzimtzum is that it refers to what can be seen and what is hidden to us. Okay, I don't know what their view is, but all I've heard is, oh, I think Debbie is putting very well, the premise of Tzimtzum theory is false, meaning filling up a universe means that God is physical. Okay, exactly. So all of you had the same response, exactly, on the mark. The concept of Tzimtzum, again, is the inability, is an expression of the inability of a human being to say, I just don't know what God is. Since a person is so attached to the physical, and that's all we know in life, a person makes the grave error of trying to fit God into physical parameters. So he can't view God as outside of the universe. Because of that, and the fact that they want to say that God and the physical universe is one, which also is an error, because again, the physical has nothing to do with God. We don't know what God is. So this error, the first error of assuming that God has to be somehow related to the physical world, causes a second error of the theory of contraction. God had to contract himself. But that violates what Yeshaya said, what Isaiah said. We go back to the Torah again, and to what Maimonides said, the chief of all philosophers. And Isaiah said, to what can you equate me that I should be similar? So God can't be equated to the physical. Since he's not equatable to the physical world, therefore no aspect of the physical world can be predicated of God. So size, space, contraction, these are all attributes of the physical world that cannot be predicated of God. Okay, so it has to be clear that how God created the world from nothing, we don't know. To ask where is God is also a misnomer, because God does not take up space. God is not physical, so therefore he is not out there. We have to get that through our minds, that anytime we try to view God in any way similar to a physical body or a physical attribute, that is an error. It's a sin of the mind. And it leads to heresy and it leads to idolatry. And this is where all the religions got their physical gods from, because they could not extricate themselves from the infantile state of life, where children look up to the parents as these great, powerful beings, because that's how a child, an infant, looks to the parent, like a super being. When the child gets older, now they start realizing the parent is no different than I am. Now what do? I have this need for a super being that cuddled me and held me and took care of me and protected me and sheltered me and clothed me and fed me. Now this great super being that I looked at when I was younger and an infant, now I realize that he's the same or she's the same as me. Now a person's at a loss, because they have that need for that the infantile image of like a godlike parent. So a human being can go one of two paths in life. He can either update his view and realize that his parents are no different than he is, and abandon the idea that his parents, something physical, has powers, or he will manifest that need in a projection onto the physical world and say, well, my parents may be equal to me, but now I have this God. Now I'll create a statue, or I'll think that God is a man in heaven. All these expressions of concretizing God to make things deified, to say that something physical is really has a power, is really just a projection from a carryover from youth. A person really has to learn to abandon and update his thinking. And that is the only way that the intelligent person will mature his thinking. Okay, I hope that's clear. All right, just type an okay on your screen now. Let's make sure that idea is clear. If there's any questions, type that too, but let's just write give me a feedback that idea is clear. But it looked like from everybody's answer that you all had that idea, that you had the correct notion. Okay, Nissim in New York is writing, unfortunately, many transfer that need to rabbis who spew fallacious but emotional attractive ideas. Yes, it's true. Many people will deify their rabbi, and whatever he says is gold, and they can't disagree. But that, again, is a corruption of thinking. I mean, you should go to your rabbi, of course, and you should seek out a rabbi. But it doesn't mean that everything he says is proper. When it comes to Jewish law, he gives you a ruling that you're obliged to follow. When he tells you a philosophical idea, if it's clear to you that he's incorrect, so you tell him, this is incorrect. You have no obligation to follow a rabbi when it comes to philosophy. There's no such thing as a psak, what we call a ruling, when it comes to philosophy. Everybody's philosophy, like a rabbi once stated very well, nobody can tell you how to think. That is something that you have no escape from. You must think for yourself. You can't just say, well, I agree with that rabbi says, if you truly don't know what he means. You gain no credit by agreeing with somebody because of his appellation, because of his title, his reputation. When it comes to philosophy, it is our obligation to think into it, and we have no other choice. Either we know something or we don't. But we can't say, well, I agree with somebody if you truly don't know what they mean. That's a lie. That is not truth. And our objective has to be truth, seeking truth. Okay, Debbie is asking, is there a psak that the Trinity is idolatry? Well, I think that we were going back and forth with a Tosos in Bechoros, and which clearly states that today, see, for example, the Gemara itself says that when, let's say, a Jew has a business partner who's not Jewish. Now, in the time of the Gemara, they said that you could not cause, let's say you had a, you know, business dealings went sour, or you need to, you want your business partner, who's a Gentile, to guarantee something to you, so you'd need him to swear about it. Well, in the times of the Gemara, since the Gentiles had idolatrous ideas, so the Gemara said a ruling that you cannot take an oath from a Gentile, because by doing so, you'd be causing him to swear to a false god. And therefore, we're not allowed, not only are we not allowed to mention false gods ourselves, unless, of course, it's for teaching purposes, but we can't cause a false god's name to be uttered, even by a non-Jew. So that's why the Gemara said that you can't take an oath, because their ideas are false. Now, what could be more false than saying that God became man? Or God is this idol? It's all the same. It's all idolatry. So, yes, there is psak. I've heard psak by a rabbi that definitely is idolatry, that the Christian Trinity, that idea is idolatry. All right, Tammy in Israel is writing, why should you seek a rabbi? Can't you learn alone and work your way according to the writings like the Shulchan Aruch? Do you really have to have a guru? Yes, Tammy, because the Torah is not based just on the written law, it's also based on the oral law. And without speaking to a rabbi, you will not be receiving the transmission that goes back. So you need to have a rabbi. Even Perkei Avos says, I say the chorah, make for yourself a rabbi. Find somebody who can give you the oral law. Okay, and Avix in the Netherlands is writing, can you give your idea why then the Arizal came up with the idea of Tzimtzum? Are you sure you understand what he meant? All I can tell you, Avix, is that the idea of Tzimtzum that we just discussed is false. It's heresy. All right? And again, don't be looking to books or reputations to say, well, if some great rabbi said something that's contrary, therefore you're going to abandon reason. That's not the approach to life. If a great rabbi tells you 2 + 2 = 5, the rabbi is wrong. And again, there is no ruling when it comes to philosophy, Avix. All right? Have that clear. You are not obliged to follow a philosophy that somebody tells you. The only obligations we have is to follow a rabbi in terms of a halacha, about a ruling for our actions, a Jewish law. Other than that, they do not have the jurisdiction, and that too is based on a Torah verse, al pi ha-Torah ha-shi'erucha, in accordance with the Torah that they teach you, meaning that is what you have to follow. Okay. All right, in Pesach, all I could say is that you have to use your mind to arrive at what is truth. All right? And Abraham, who was not a Jew, had the right concept, and we see that that has been validated in the Torah. All right. Now let's just take a, if there's any questions and answers at this point, I'll pause. That's pretty much what I wanted to just discuss today. I know we went a little bit longer than the 30 minutes. But now let me just open up the floor to you if you have any comments or questions on what we took up today. And Pesach, you're writing that you're saying you and the Orthodox movement seem entirely void of creativity or imagination. Well, you could only use creativity and imagination based on reality. To be like a Gene Roddenberry and just come up with ideas of faraway civilizations and planets, that's very creative. It's very imaginative, but it's also very unbased on any truth. So if you want to be rooted in truth, that's where you have to go back to. All right. So let me see if there's any questions or comments. If not, we will be wrapping up today's session. And Hector, you're writing that somewhere that Islam is unlike Christianity and is not considered idolatry. As long as they have the concept of the creator of the universe and that's all that exists, then it would not be idolatry. The rule is go back to the sources, to what the Torah says and what the prophets say and the writings of the rabbis. This is where Judaism comes from. Not from what's being echoed today, unfortunately. Pesach, I invite you to give any type of rational reputation, but you're not doing that. If you have a rational reputation of something, feel free to write it down. If you don't, then you should abandon the belief yourself. Okay, and welcome to Katrina and Sarah. All right, it looks like there's no other comments or questions. So we'll wrap up the class at this point. Again, the class will be online under the audio files link shortly after the class. And you'll be able to hear the class in its entirety. And we will post, I guess on Friday, we'll post when the next class will be. And invite you all to join. And I'll just wait one more moment. Any other comments? Okay, it looks like that's it for today. So let me wish everybody a good day, a good week. Stay posted by the emails. You'll be notified when the next class will be. You'll listen to the, go to the audio files link to hear today's class. And I do again urge everybody to listen to the first few classes on the fundamentals, because this will give you a clear understanding, I hope, of Maimonides' view on why we do not attribute to the God anything of this world. And this will give you a solid foundation where you will not make these errors that other people do about God contracting himself, or that the universe is outside of God, so on and so forth. Okay. So let me wish everybody a good week, and we'll be in touch. Take care to everybody. I'm glad everybody else to join us today.